Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.
Hi, this is David J. Neff, and you're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast. Have you ever walked through your neighborhood, taken a look at a strange or weird home, and wondered, who lives there? What's inside of that home? Well, I think as human beings, we've all have done that. And that's what this podcast is all about, is to explore the weird and strange world of the people who live in those homes. Hey, everybody. This is David J. Neff with the Weird Homes Podcast.
And this is Shelley Neff. And today we have Valerie Chassonet. She is a multi-talented person. Just a few of the things here, because there's a long list. She's a French teacher. She's an artist. She's an art collector. She's a mom. All the things. We have the pleasure of having her here today. We're going to talk a little bit about all the things she does and why she is on our Weird Homes tour.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Of course.
Thank you.
Thank you. Tell us a little bit about where you grew up and a little bit about your childhood.
All right. So I was really lucky because I grew up in beautiful places and I had parents who were very nature oriented and but urban at the same time. And so I had a chance of having a lot of the city. I was born in Paris. I grew up in the suburbs of Paris, but would go there a lot. And then when I was 10, we moved to Provence. And then we didn't have to go on vacation anymore because we lived on vacation, right? And it was incredibly beautiful. And being a teenager, I was a lot in nature. And I was I had a lot of friendships. I got, when I was 16, I got a little motorcycle, a little dirt bike. I was very free and able to just leave between classes at school and so on. And then went back to Paris to study, spent 1 year in Bordeaux in the meantime. And my major was Russian. So I took lots of trips to Russia. I had read Dostoevsky and I had all these romantic ideas about the Slavic soul and decided Russian I needed to study. And also as a kid, I had read, there were two major fairy tales that were very important. One of them was the story of Baba Yaga, the terrifying witch that eats little children. But
is that like the Babadook? Have you seen that movie?
No.
Oh my gosh. Sorry to interrupt. Okay. You just reminded me of that.
Baba just means an old lady in Russian. Mm-hmm. So it could be Baba, all kinds of things. Mm-hmm. But Baba Yaga is this particular witch. She's kind of like the Llorona in a Mexican culture. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So exactly. She's kind of a children eating witch, but she's also the Kali. So she's the goddess of death that also helps you to resuscitate into a new person. Uh-huh. And then so there's all these initiation stories of this little girl who is sent by the evil stepmom to be eaten by Baba Yaga, but survives through her cleverness and through her pack rat instincts, because she collects stuff. When she finds stuff that is interesting, she collects it, not knowing what it's going to be for. And then suddenly they all find use. And that's how she escapes Baba Yaga, which I think sort of got into my psyche, or maybe it echoed in some of my psyche, you know, as a little girl. That was one. And then the other one was the story of a little Eskimo child who was from, with beautiful watercolors by Paul-Émile Victor, who is a writer that was doing children book, but was an anthropologist from Greenland, from France, but had lived in Greenland. And that story was amazing because it took a little baby and you saw his life until he dies and he goes to Eskimo heaven. And it was incredible when you're very small to see a story that takes you through the whole thing. And suddenly you realize, well, I am this child, but someday I'll be an old person. And then people who are old, they were sometimes a child. So that was a sense of time that was important. But I think those two fairy tales were really crucial in shaping me in kind of an unconscious way. So the Baba Yaga was part of also what worked on the Russian thing. And then I ended up spending time in Russia. I ended up becoming a Siberian expert as an anthropologist. And then I came to the U.S. because America was part of my plan for adventures. I was an adventurous kid. So when I was 24, I got an excuse of a topic to study for research and came to the U.S. And I was in California for a year, which was just like Provence. I got a little motorcycle again. And I was like in the hills of behind Berkeley. And it was beautiful. And meeting all these incredible, intelligent people there. Then I was in Canada for a year. And then I spent a lot of time with Inuit people. So I had my Aputiak adventure myself, living with Inuit in the winter and then also in the summer. And then I was going to go to Russia to continue my research for my doctorate. Instead, I got a letter from the Smithsonian asking me to come and work on a major exhibit, the first Soviet-American exhibit where they were full partners.
Wow.
And they needed somebody who knew Russian and who knew the Siberian material. And they found a French woman to do it, which seems kind of perverse, but right. It was fantastic. And I had the time of my life spending 11 years doing exhibits at the Smithsonian and traveling in Siberia and traveling in Alaska. And so, you know, seeing the Northern Lights and being in exhibit storage and seeing all these beautiful, beautiful art pieces, you know, just, but those objects that were all used, you know, a lot of them, there was just very little that was made for the sake of art. But everything that was made that was used had to be beautiful. That was part of fulfilling the function. And that's really a principle I have also in my thinking. Something is not efficient if it's not also beautiful. And of course, if it's beautiful but doesn't function, like, you know, a really pretty kettle, but it burns you every time, that doesn't work either. Right. You know, it has to be, but it has to be both.
And so tell me, so as you're doing that,
yes,
and you're at the Smithsonian and you're doing research and everything else, because I think of you as producing your own art.
Yes.
And then you're also somewhat of a collector, probably. Yes. So are you doing both those at the same time, or does that come later on?
The collecting, I had some friends who were artists, and I collected a little bit of, I had very little money, you know, but within my means, a little bit of thinking, but you're exactly right. I couldn't take it. I was around all these beautiful artifacts, and it's like, I need to do something about this. I was a creator. I needed to do to make. So I signed up for night classes at the Corcoran Art School, which was, it's near the White House. So from the mall, I worked on the mall, in the middle of the mall, which also was fabulous because every day for lunch, I walked to a museum and see an exhibit, you know, so that was 11 years.
Yeah, very jealous of that.
You know, that was and then the Smithsonian is this incredible place where everything is free and open late in the summer. I mean, it was at the time open late in the summer. I lived across from the zoo. The zoo was open until 10 p.m. I would go and it was free. So it was, my garden was the zoo. Mm-hmm. So I was living with all these animals, but after work, I would walk to the Corcoran and then starting sculpture. And then I started different materials, starting welding, and fell in love with welding. And that was it. From that, we produced exhibits with my friends where there were architects there who also were frustrated that they were all drawing but not making, and they wanted to make and get their hands dirty. And we had a wonderful time. We created a collective. We called it the Washington Heavy School, which was kind of a fun thing because we're making things out of steel and concrete and glass and heavy material. And there used to be a movement 20 years prior that was the Washington Calder School, famous school in art history. And so that was kind of a response in our kind of tongue-in-cheek way of doing it. But I started this, and then it was time to have babies. That was something that I knew was totally in my destiny, I guess. It was an imperative in any case. And so I had Olivier, who's 24 now, in D.C. And then I wanted to move to a place. And then the projects were finishing. I had done all these exhibits and done lots of wonderful things. But this project in particular was finishing. And I was thinking, maybe I want to do something else. So we moved to Austin for, you know, all kinds of reasons. But we found this little house. I fell in love with the house in about a second and a half.
You know.
It's the first house we visited.
Wow.
So the realtor, it was all kinds of strange coincidences, but very Austin. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm a very people-oriented person. Right. And in D.C. it was very hard to make friends until I went to art school, because people always calculate, like, can they use you? Are you, you know, and then it doesn't stick. It was not very authentic. It was hard. But as soon as I fell into Austin, I fell into this vortex. It's like the sea was opening in front of me, and just I was being guided to do things. So in any case, we saw the house. We decided on what area we wanted after we had talked to the realtor. And he says, okay, well, I'll pull the 8 houses. And we come in front, and I look at this brick ranch home, and I'm thinking, oh, that gives me the creeps. Usually I hate bricks. It looks like David Lynch movie. There's probably somebody in a cage inside. I just don't want to get in.
David and I would like that.
You know? So it was like totally not what I wanted. And I walked in the house, and I looked through the window, and I see this view, and I see the yard, and it looks totally like Provence, and it looks like something I've dreamed of. And seriously, I walked to the window, split second, I recognized it as my house.
Aww.
And so that was 97, and I was pregnant with Nicholas at the time. So mm-hmm. I was also in the nesting mode, you know. And after that, we visited other houses and there's just nothing that worked. And then, of course, in my house, there was the greenhouse was yeah. what the nail in the coffin. You know, this was like totally solidified that, yes, that's the confirmation. The pink bathroom with the pink tiles and the green tub. And yeah. so that was so outrageous. And yet it was a carbon copy of the bathroom I had chosen to do when my parents built a house in Provence.
What?
And I was 11 and they say, what would you want for your tiles? We had tiles, different tiles with different colors mm-hmm. for different bathrooms. And I said, of course, I'm 11, right? And I said, pink. So I had pink bathroom and I paint the walls that exact green.
What?
So wow. when I saw that bathroom in my Jeez. Current that's house wild. Was like, okay, that's if I didn't get the message already, right. I'm getting a yeah. confirmation. So I got three confirmation of the message that this was my house.
And that orange tree was in the backyard.
And the
right?
orange tree was there. We didn't know what it was because there was so no cross-pollinating. Cool. So there yeah. was this citrus tree, which makes those beautiful blossoms, but no fruit. And then I got some mayo lemons later. And then in the winter, I moved mm-hmm. all my plants that are in front of the house into the greenhouse. And it's gorgeous when mm-hmm. it's full of flowers. And full of plants, like it is on the photos, you yeah. know, like that.
We'll,
and that.
We'll put some of those photos up for people listening.
Beautiful photos yeah, yeah. of the greenhouse with the plants. But then it cross-pollinated, and then we saw that it was an orange tree with those beautiful so oranges. So, yeah, that was incredible to find that. And I was lucky enough, I finally, the first time didn't quite work, but the second time with Nicholas, I had my home birth like I wanted. And oh, so wow. Nicholas was born in that house, and we planted wow. his placenta underneath the tree in uh-huh. front. I know it's funny for some people to hear that. Say, yeah, don't talk about placenta. I said, well, sorry, but you know, that's just the reality.
Our right? audience this would love awesome. To hear about
yes,
that.
Yes, okay, all right. Yeah. So
you didn't eat it, I mean.
No, some people eat it. Yeah. And actually, we had in the freezer. It was like a joke. Like we say, it's placenta, not polenta. Uh-huh. But, you know, we had in the freezer Olivier's placenta because we were going to plant Olivier's placenta for 3 years. We had it in the freezer. Then we had it in ice when we were traveling from D.C. to Austin and back in the freezer. And wow. finally, when we got the house, we planted an olive tree for Olivier, since aww. Olivier means olive tree. Yeah. So there is an olive tree in the backyard, which is Olivier's. And there is in front, we have this beautiful persimmon tree, which makes the most beautiful and delicious persimmon trees with Nicholas's placenta. So I think that means it's really my house at
yeah.
this
yes.
point.
That house was made yes. for you.
Yeah, yeah. that has been.
Yeah.
You're listening to the Weird Homes Podcast.
Hello, this is Shelley Neff with the Weird Homes Podcast, and I am a big fan of Native Solar. I've had them on my house for 3 years, and did you know they are one of the longest-running, most established, Texas-owned and operated solar installation companies in the state? Take your power back. Visit nativesolar.com. So I want to kind of give people a visual of what your home was like because you talked about welding and metal sculptures.
Yes.
So how is that incorporated into your home?
All right. So when I started, I had a few sculptures I brought mm-hmm. from D.C., but not as many. And I was not painting yet. And I had these two babies. I had a toddler and a newborn. Mm-hmm. And the house, I still didn't like the brick ranch home. And there was all this, you know, 50s decor, which I don't care much for, plus the 70s faux paneling, which was like one day I was in a, just like couldn't take it. And I climbed on the kitchen table and started ripping off the paneling in the kitchen. And Norman came back home and said, what happened? Yeah. It was a demolition inside. I had ripped off all the paneling as I can't take it. And I painted actually with pigments from Provence. I got pigments from Provence. Wow. I had brought back beautiful ochre mm-hmm. that I mixed with linseed oil mm-hmm. and turpentine. And then I put that on the wall. It was before I discovered discovered the faux glaze at Home Depot, you know. But so I did it like the old traditional way, and it took like 6 days to dry, and we had to have the fans and stuff. But it's really beautiful finish. Yeah. So my kitchen is really striking because of those warm earth colors, and it looks very Provençal. We demolished. There was some faux styrofoam beams in the living room, which we also tore that down, I think, the first week. And I painted the ceiling, and then the glue that I had to hold the styrofoam showed through the paint, so I had to reprime, and I did it like three times. And the third time, and I was getting a crook in my neck because I was painting those clouds kind of like Van Gogh-like on the ceiling. I wanted those clouds. Yeah. So my house, I think, is striking because from the outside, it's still the brick home. We still haven't stuccoed it, although that's the plan at some point, or to do a second story or something, you know? Mm-hmm. But the door is weird because it was painted by Olivier when he was 4 or 5. So he painted those big hearts for his favorite teacher when she was coming to visit. He did it with chalk. And I said, oh, this is so beautiful. We have to do it in paint and keep it. And so I helped him with the paint and we painted it. So that's what the, and of course it's peeling because it's not very good quality door. So it's peeling at the bottom, but at some point I will change it. But for now, it's just Olivier's, you know, art piece, and it's welcoming and it's kind of odd, which of course is not a bad thing.
No.
You know, as we all know.
Yes.
And so you enter and there was a brick wall. And I said, this is very strange. It's like we're 1 yard away and you bump into a brick wall when you enter your house. Mm. I don't think that's very good feng shui. Yeah. I hated this. So we covered it with sheetrock. Yeah. Exactly. And then I did a full plaster, you know, to make it look like stucco. And then I wanted a big vista. And since I had the babies and I couldn't really weld, which, you know, you as you can understand, I mean, it's not an easy thing to do with babies. I took up painting, and that's when I started to paint. And I wanted to do a beautiful paint. So I designed what I wanted to paint for this. And a friend was is a painter, and she taught me how to mix the oil paint and with the solvents. And I painted this one painting, which is a view of Provence with a lavender field. And my two little boys are in there playing in the lavender field. And there's a big mountain that I grew up with, which is the mountain Cézanne grew up with, you know, Le Saint-Victoire. So it's my mountain too. And that was the beginning of painting. And that's what you enter in my house. So you start seeing the art. Then I had a daycare at my house because that's how I figured I could make a living and raise my children. I created a French daycare. It was French immersion at my house. And I had like up to 10 toddlers with a girlfriend, of course. There were two of us. And I had like up to 10 toddlers come. And we were doing all French and cooking and singing. And it was really, really fun.
I want to go to that right
now. Yeah. So, the so there were less, there was less metal and it was less dangerous than it looks now at the time. Then when my kids were about 6, I resumed metal work and I went to ACC, the community college here, which has a fabulous metal department. And I was able to weld there and then to start making sculptures again. And then after 11 years of doing the daycare, my kids started to grow and I was really getting more into the art. So I kept, besides the daycare I was doing after school, then I was doing, parents were asking for classes. So I do adult classes too. Now I've kept the adult classes and I do dinners at my house and we speak French over dinners. So it's kind of like a supper club, but it's French. And the rule is you come for a French class and it happens to be you're fed and you're around the table and you speak French. Wow. So that's what I do now for that part. And then I've develop my art much more and I'm having a lot of exhibits and I'm doing more of my metal work in my house. So now when you walk in my house, there are like 100 metal sculptures and it's really, you don't want to bump into things because it can be dangerous. But I think it's striking between the colors, you know, so every room is painted with a different personality and a different style. My bedroom is blue. I always dreamed of having a blue bedroom and the same thing. I ripped off the paneling and I had it kind of redone with a better finish and painted all of that. And it's really fun. So it's a small, smallish house. And it's, we had one bathroom for everybody. And then there are only two doors, you know, in the whole house. So all the doors were open, but that was fine with that. So it was non-conventional. The bedrooms, there were two big beds in one bedroom and there were different configurations. The kid could sleep where they wanted. And it was, I wanted that freedom and that closeness in the family, which is so unlike a structured conventional way, but I think it worked well for our family.
Yeah.
People who are listening to this, we talk about inspiration and kind of design creativity. So I have my house and I'm like, I really want to put a mannequin in the corner, or the David Lynch cage goes over there, or the sculpture I buy goes over there. Yeah. But we talk a lot about people are afraid to make that change. Like, but I'm going to sell this house and I don't want to change anything, and living in the now. So talk to me. What's the advice? How would I start? What do I start?
So I say a few things about that. One thing is you need to honor what is in you, because otherwise you go crazy. And I think you're an oppressed person. You might have all the money in the world. You might, you know, look good from the outside or whatever, but you're really oppressed. I think there is something to be said for the wildness of our psyche and our inside and following our instinct. The other thing is I got the house, it had been restyled to look 50s or whatever. And it was like, to me, that was not precious. So a lot of people walk into a brand new house and they have the beautiful big granite counter and it's the wrong color. But you know what? They're not going to demolish it, or they're not going to take the marble off, or the travertine, or whatever the latest style is in the bathroom that has been remodeled, because it costs money and it's really difficult. In my case, that was not the case at all. I felt there was no problem in like ripping off stuff and making it different. And I'm thinking there are two parts to my house. There is the part that is the private part. So I'm doing this for me because it feels good to me to have my objects. And my objects, I'm kind of an animist person. I really think that there is spirit in things. And so I live in my house surrounded by objects that are spirits and that carry me. And then the other thing is the public side. You have to decide to be strong and just like show who you are and then play. And then nothing is, and it doesn't have to cost much money either. That's the thing. You can do it yourself. There's a lot to be said for doing it yourself. And if you've never done it, you say, well, I've never done this, I can't. It's like, well, how do you know you can't if you haven't tried, you know?
Right. YouTube.
So, tried. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. YouTube figuring it out and not being afraid. So I think what we all have in common in your owners of the weird homes is that we're not afraid of trying something. And the thing is, if you get oops paint, the paint that people return, and it's like you mix it and just like try it, and it's acrylic. It's not going to poison you or anything like that. It's just like, you know, you have the fan, you open the windows, do it. Then you don't sleep in that room for 2 nights. And then you come back and if you don't like the color, you do it again. You know, it's really not a big deal to try that. You can with a few things. I think we think we're free to not change things, but I don't think we are, because we're people who change, the culture change. Our development, you know, in our understanding of ourselves changes, and we have to follow that. And for me, a house really reflects who I am. So the private part of it is it reflects who I am. The public part of it, I decided, and that's one of things that I would like, you know, I think it's useful for people to ponder. It's a big investment to have a house. It's a big investment, especially in Austin now with property taxes, etc. So I want the house to pay for itself. And so having my school and my studio in my house is my way of collaborating with my house and making my house a full partner in my businesses. And I think that's a very important thing. And I want it to be joyful. So my house is clean when my students show up. You know, I've swept and I clean my bathroom and my kitchen is really nice. But it's kind of weird looking. You know, it's unusual because it's stuff that I like. And I think people are happy to be that's there beautiful. In something that is different. And it feeds them because I make this wonderful food, of course, you know, and I do all organic and all beautiful. And it fills their soul because we're speaking French and we're having a very interesting conversation they're interested in, and it fits them because it is authentic and it is different, and I think it's a little exotic, and I think they're happy. People usually have a big grin, and really during the tour I loved seeing the visitors coming in and look, and they are saying just big grins on their face and they're looking everywhere, and so many of them at the end would come and say thank you so much for opening your house, and I could tell that it had made them happy to see the space, which is right. So that's the public part of my house, and that makes me really happy. I do the West Studio Tour where I open my house for, you know, Big Medium is this organization in Austin, and they organize this tour of studios, home studios, and I'm doing it again in May, and I always have guests that come, and so we change, you know, the art changes, and it's really fun having people come and they like to see the art, but they also like to see the house.
I'll tell you, we tell people when you come on the tour, you're going to see weird homes, but get ready to get inspired. And you are a living example of that for us, because when we went into your home, we saw these beautiful bookcases that you had built and painted. And I was like, oh my gosh, I want that in my home. Where can I put that? And we actually, in our front room, we call it the library now, because we painted the wall blue and we had these custom bookshelves built in, and we put on the whole wall is bookshelves, and that's because of you.
Oh, so that's wonderful. You. And so, you know, I'm a big, big book lover. I mean, books are the books, as you've seen, there are books in every room in my house. And at some point, there were books in the kitchen too. And then I decided I needed those shelves for my tea collection. But I mean, truly, they are, I mean, not in the bathroom. In the bathroom, whatever. But, you know, with the steam, it's, I have art in, art on the walls. I don't have the shelves in the bathroom. But other than that, there are like bookshelves in every room. Books are really important. I think they carry the knowledge. I think there is innovation and doing something a little bit, do it yourself and do it new. But I think there is a long, long tradition. And I think it's the influence of the countries I've seen, the colors I've seen, the things I like. And then I put that in there and then make it, you know, my own.
How many languages do you speak?
Oh, well, I speak Russian and French.
Oh, okay.
Besides English, and that's it. And
that's so cool.
Yeah. I'd like to speak Italian and Japanese, but that's like later. Yeah.
We have this for all of our folks. But what is the strangest thing in your home?
Besides me? Okay, so I have to talk about, you guys picked my sculpture of Baba Yaga as the logo for my house. And I was really happy that you guys, you know, zoomed in on that, because it's a piece that is very interesting to me. It's a piece I started to make. I've always liked making faces because I love people and faces are very important to me, other human beings. And I started to make this, and as I was making it, it started to scare me. It really scared me. And I'm thinking, oh, I can't continue this sculpture. It's just too powerful, and there is something going on that is like beyond my control, and there's already, and it was too late. It was just, I couldn't even talk about it in front of her. I mean, I didn't know what it was yet, but I had to be in another room to whisper, I think I want to get rid of this thing. But it was kind of that strange presence there. And then I looked at it and said, well, there's nothing I can do. I've created it. It's kind of like a Frankenstein type of thing, you know, it's an experience. And I continue. And then one day it's like, oh, I recognized her. It is Baba Yaga. And then as soon as I recognized and I was able to see, then I was able to recognize that type of energy and says, no, it's not a negative energy. It's a good energy, but it's a formidable energy that you have to be extremely careful and respectful of. And so then it became Baba Yaga, and Norman loved her, and he says, I want her in my office. So he has it in his office. And actually, you know, this one is at the Central Library at the moment. She's on the sixth floor by the door when you go into the garden. And they have her in the case there. And so she's on view, you know, for the public. But otherwise, she's like keeping an eye on Norman when he's working and keeping him, you know, straight. And so I'm happy you're saying, I think that's probably the strangest thing. Actually, one sign of the coming of Baba Yaga is thunder. She usually comes on a mortar. She has
mortar
the
and pestle.
She has. Yeah. She rides the pestle, and she has the mortar, and then she beats the mortar with the pestle as a way of flying off to enter her house, which is on chicken feet, and runs around. She enters through a, you know, magic word through the door, through the chimney, because she flies in. So, anyways, thunder announces her arrival. And one day, I was talking to a friend and showing this sculpture, and then I was being very respectful in presenting the sculpture to my friend. Actually, my friend who taught me how to paint. And thunder stroke, and she's terrified of thunder, and she run in like crazy. And I was like totally petrified, and I thought, this is really uncanny. I mean, that, you know, thunder would happen. So that's one piece that I think is wonderful and kind of like that. I had made some notes. I wanted to cover some things. Yeah, I think there is also encouragement. You know, you were talking about inspiration. Mm-hmm. I think there would be also in my story maybe encouragement for people to not necessarily take the straight path, but try different things that feel like they feed their soul at the time when they do. And so as women, as you know, we're always multitasking.
Right.
We always carry all these different hats and we have all these jobs at once. And it's just like we have to prioritize more one than the other at different times and recreate ourselves and reinvent ourselves all the time. And I think my story is like, okay, I have this house. I have to do something. I'm going to do a daycare in it, you know, and then I'm going to make it into my studio, and then I'm going to open it up. And then who knows what the next thing is going to be, you know.
Yeah, you keep evolving.
You keep evolving. Yeah. And I think so. I think there is also a bit of a streak of a feminist ideology, you know, being shown in that you can have your house and make it.
Yeah.
You know, the house is traditionally the domain of the woman. I mean, it doesn't have to be, but often just the women are the ones who decide on, you know.
Yeah, I know what I do in our house.
Well, I think it's a traditional thing. And so it's really important because that reflects also who we are and our personality. And we have to feel good in it, you know. So
that is interesting to think about our homeowners and the people we've gotten to know. It is a large group of strong, independent women who are artists or collectors who are kind of blazing their own path.
And that's usually really work for themselves as well.
Yeah, usually very entrepreneurial.
Yeah. Right? Yeah, yeah. Figure out a way of making it work. I'm happy you're saying this, Dave, because I picked up a book again this week that I had read 20 years ago that had a strong influence on me. It's called Women Who Run with the Wolves by Clarissa. Yes, Clarissa. Yeah. Pinkola Estes. And that was like, you're younger, but people my generation really know this book. It was a big, big deal when it came out. And it's taking fairy tales, certain fairy tales that are an illustration of the wild woman archetype, which is kind of like the wolf. It has a biological thing, but it's like in praise of the wildness in us and the fact that we can't repress this wildness. Otherwise, we're unhappy, we go crazy, we're miserable, we're depressive, you know, all of that. And we can't. So I think in the weird homes, you probably have a pretty good sampling of wild wolf-running women, you know, who've created their own way and follow their own spirit. And I think that's what together, and we need to be very careful to preserve. It's a fragile thing, you know, there are predators out there that want to normalize, that want to, you know, ridicule, that want to reset us like the normal way because they're so afraid of something that might be outside
of the box. Like once it's out of the box, you can't put it back in.
I think so. But you can really pay a high price for it, you know. So it's like it's important to be all like holding elbows to elbows and just like hanging strong and then showing, no, there is a way. And for people to take inspiration from that. So I'm really happy you mentioned that. That's a book you should look into.
Yeah, I will.
And one of the stories is Baba Yaga.
Oh,
also.
Nice.
So it's kind of fun to read that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's called Running with the Wolves.
Women Who Run with the Wolves.
Yeah. Yeah.
I also wanted to ask you, too, who are some of your favorite artists?
Well, since I'm a practicing artist, it's a really hard question to answer because it's like if you are a practicing musician and, you know, who are your favorite musicians? It's kind of like, well, which 300 shall I start quoting to you? You know?
Sure.
I like people who like strong colors. It's interesting. My sculptures are very monochromatic. So it's just I like the natural rust of the steel and I like having just the different patina, so it's very subtle in the change of colors. But as a painter and a watercolorist, I use very bright colors. So I would say like artists like De Fauve, like Gauguin, you know, is a person whose colors I'm inspired by. There are just very, very many that work in subtle ways, you know, in influencing me. It's hard to tell. There are some metal sculptors that have been really important. Anthony Caro probably would be. He's a British metal artist that has done really spectacular things. He died not too long ago, and I often felt a lot of affinity with his work. I like the metal to be raw, to be rough. I like the welds to show. I'm not trying to hide them. There's nothing polished in it. I think steel has a strength that comes from the spirit of the fire that has created it, and I like for that strength and that rawness to show. And I think in part of those wild women that we are, there is a part of the raw. And the raw is
being
the
vulnerable.
Beauty. You know, it's honorable. It's Janis Joplin type of raw energy, which is just so strong and, to me, appealing, you know, rather than the polished. Yeah, I mean, we can have both, you know, like all these women, we're also really feminine, aren't we? I mean, we're feminine, masculine, badass.
It's being strong, but being vulnerable.
Yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Exactly.
Well, great. Thank you
Excellent.
So much.
Well, thank you so much.
I would love for you to talk about where can people find your work online, Instagram, just where
yeah,
are
so
you
Instagram,
out there?
Yeah, so I'm trying to get more into the Instagram. It's really a lot to juggle, Facebook mm-hmm. and Instagram mm-hmm. and my website and all of that. But I have a website, which is my name, valeriechaussonnet.com. So that's, you have to look at the way it's spelled because it's 2 S, 2 N's, 1 T. It's like, good luck with that. But nonetheless, and Facebook, I have an art page. I have a school page called La Petite Provence because people actually comment, they come in and then they say, how do you make this piece of Austin look like Provence? And I say, well, it was like this before I arrived. And just, I just like had to just give it a name. But so La Petite Provence is the name of the school. And then the art exhibiting around Austin and other places too. And the best ways to connect with me through Facebook or, you know.
Thank you, Valerie.
Yeah, thank you so much, Shelley.
Thank you so much.
Yeah.
We'd love for you today to go check out our website at weirdhomestour.com. You can find the new coffee table book that features all the homes that you're hearing about on the podcast. We'd also love for you to check out our Instagram, Weird Homes Tour. And finally, really, we want this podcast to inspire you to show that design has no boundaries and that we would rather have neighbors be strange than be strangers.
Native Solar's energy experts will design and install energy-producing, money-saving solar panels on your home or business that will decrease your electricity bills while increasing the value of your property and the quality of your life. Take your power back at nativesolar.com.